Oh, you dickheads.
Welcome to episode 27 of Double Dodge. This one's called The Thresh Prince. How are you, Campbell?
I'm fantastic. This is going to be a glorious episode, and I'm just... It's the festive time of year, so I'm getting a little bit festive.
Well, that's good. That's good. So the man that we interviewed this time around, he was feeling pretty festive as well, I thought.
He was high. He was high on life, and why wouldn't you be? Like, when you win worlds... in fact, at any point when you can call yourself a world champion at anything, I think you should be happy with life. So, good on him.
Indeed. So we're chatting to the one, the only, Alex Botsy Bots, world champion 2017. What a man. What a myth.
Yeah, he's like the Kylo Ren to our Rey, I think. I think, you know, in a yin-yang kind of sense, you always need to have an opposing force which kind of binds us all together. So, yeah, you know, people didn't think that we'd get him on once. We've got him on twice.
Yep. Because that's how we roll here at Double Dodge. Ultimately, we are lovers, not fighters. Though,
yeah, absolutely.
We'll fight if we have to.
Yeah. Mainly on Twitter. Fantastic. Yeah, so we have a really good conversation with him, obviously about Worlds. We don't do a play-by-play. We talk about a few games, but we really just wanted to chat about the meta as a whole and basically just look at where we think the game is sitting, how he thinks it's sitting, and, you know, where we think it can go.
Yeah. So it's a pretty good chat about Thresher, how to deal with Thresher. You know, we asked the very important question, is Thresher OP? And we have a chat about that too. So anybody who's looking to get the hot goss on the Thresher situation, here we go.
Yeah, oh, Alex was full of that information. Yeah, he gave us everything. And why wouldn't you when you've already fucking toweled everyone with him? So, you know, I'd do that too.
Indeed. Mm. So I think before we kick into this, we say well done, Botsy, and get this slingshot working.
Yeah, boom.
So we have all the way from Chicago, the one, the only, Alex Botsy Bots, world champion 2017. How are you, sir?
I am doing great, because I am large and in charge, finally, after all this time. How are you guys doing?
We're doing pretty well.
Good. Friday afternoon here. It's like middle of the night for you, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, I'll be going to bed after this. But
no, we really appreciate your time. I think in true Double Dodge tradition, we're just going to go with one question this time. Is that right, Dave?
I think it's the only question that needs asking. So, Alex, after your recent world championship win, what have you got to say to yourself?
You fucking did it. All the luck in the world, you finally did it.
Nice.
Well done, mate. That's a huge...
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Mm. Yeah, I'm just hyped as shit. I don't know. I mean, it's cool. I guess it's been a few days, so I'm not, like, as amped up as I was, but it's still... it's been a really cool experience. I literally, when I started Guild Ball, it was like with the intent to get good, right? It was like, I don't know, I've been on your guys' cast before, so even if people don't listen to my cast, they've heard me talk about how I started out as a War Machine player, and I never really got competitive. And like part of the time that I was a War Machine player was like a teenager, so I couldn't travel at all, right? I mean, I would have had to come up with my own money and stuff like that, but... When I started Guild Ball and Guild Ball was relatively new, I was like, this is the game that I want to actually, like, focus on competitively and get good at. And I've actually made it. Like, I made it all the way to the top, and that's fucking sick.
That is pretty awesome. Did you celebrate pretty hard that night?
Honestly, I was so fucking tired. Most of what I did drink, of course, but mostly what we did is we had Adam Thede from Sweden staying with us, and he left us with a bunch of fucking awful candy, this, like, horrible... salty shit that was like you guys can't see me, but candy is in heavy quotation marks. Like, it was physically painful to eat, and I now have a big stock of the stuff left, mostly just as dares for my friends who are not into Guild Ball. I'll be like, you know, hand it to them as like hangover cure or something, and it's like getting punched in the face by like a salt golem. It's horrible. It's I don't I seriously, you know, I can't read Swedish, obviously, but I swear to God, this stuff must be medicinal. It can't possibly be something anybody eats actually recreationally. It's horrible.
Well, they do say to the winner goes the spoils.
Maybe. Maybe the, what is that, the Hevla goat that you guys are obsessed with? Maybe it's like a self-immolation thing because they're forced to eat this stuff all year.
You know, I mean, they don't get sun half the year either, so maybe
that's... Yeah, yeah, it's all...
But I think the real issue here is, yes, you did get to the top, and you did it the hard way. And to that, you know, we have to take our hats off. That was a long run to get there.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Mm. So the LCQ alone, I mean, it started off pretty dicey for you.
about as dicey as it gets.
Yeah, that must have been a bit demoralizing. So, like, how did you feel after that first round loss?
Yeah, so for folks that didn't hear, I lost my first game of SteamCon US to Shane Waddy. I don't think I've pronounced his name out loud, his last name before, so I hope that's right. But Canadian player, really great guy, and really great Thresher player. It was a Thresher mirror, in fact, a perfect model mirror. And it was rough, man. So I'll be honest, I had spoken to Shane before on the internet, but I hadn't heard, like, nobody had told me about him, about whether he was, like, a particularly well-known Canadian player or a particularly successful Canadian player. So, excuse me, I knew that he'd been playing Guild Ball, and I knew that he'd been playing Thresher, because we had talked about it before, but I didn't know that he was relatively well-respected, and I sort of felt like I had come into SteamCon being, like, you know, the guy hyped up on Thresher. I mean, anybody who follows me on, like, Twitter or whatever knows that I'm super into playing Thresher, and I thought that he was great and strong and all that. I came in here being like, well, I'm going to be the super practiced Thresher player, and I immediately lose a fucking mirror. And that felt like a disaster. It was like, oh shit, I'm a fraud. I don't actually know how to play this game at all. There's other people who have practiced this as well as me, but I had told myself before the LCQ that I had to play the whole thing no matter what, because there was this weird situation with a qualification where, like, I think it ended up being all of the 5-1 players got into the Nationals the next day. So I knew I could still get in there, and I could still at least, you know, play some good games and learn some stuff and hopefully get a little bit farther in the weekend. So I kind of, you know, I just forced myself to play and not get too tilted and not get too worried that I lost my first game, despite being this player that has been hyped up, or at least I'm highly ranked on the Longshanks rankings, right?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know, don't be cute about it.
I don't know. People could accuse me of being just somebody who plays the OP stuff, and I don't think that would be, like, objectively wrong, right? So.
No. That's interesting, because that brings me into probably part of the overarching conversation here is, everyone had the opportunity to take Thresher, right? It's not just you.
Yeah, that's true.
We've all known the stats for Thresher since the book came out a long time ago. What basically made you think that this was the right, you know, team to take into not only the LCQ, but, you know, try to win your way through? Because that's essentially, you know, you've done something and not many other people other than Shane Waddy thought that was a good idea.
Yeah. So when the Farmers came out, so I was a playtester for the Farmers for part of the Farmers, but we stopped before they were finalized. So when the Farmers, their final rules came out, I sort of knew what they would be doing roughly. Like, I knew that Thresher was going to be like a super solo and Grange was going to be more of a support captain. I didn't know exactly what their rules would be until everybody else saw them. When I saw them, I was really excited for Farmers as, like, a concept, and a lot of people were hyped up on Grange. I don't think Grange is bad by any means, but I really like super solo captains. I really like ones that are aggressive and that focus on, like, fighting and kind of pushing the tempo of the game. And so Thresher really felt like a good fit for me. He sort of felt like a more souped-up Hammer or Filet or anybody like that, which are captains that I like playing, but I felt that those two in particular were not great in the metagame right now. But I really thought that I could, with enough practice, and I don't mind proxying. I know a lot of people don't enjoy playing with proxies, and I understand why, but I have no problem playing proxies or no problem playing on Vassal or whatever. I felt like with a lot of practice, I could show that Thresher was really strong and that things like his 3-inch melee can be really abusive in the hands of a practiced player who understands the game really well. And so I was really just, I was banking on that. I was banking on my ability to, like, or my dedication to practicing that list, basically, from when they came out in April. And then leading up to SteamCon, you know, I listened to the other podcasts. I listened to you guys, of course. I listened to a lot of other podcasts. And I'm always talking to other players who are really active in the game, especially U.S. players, but occasionally, like at WTC, I get to talk to a lot of international players as well. And I got the impression that not a lot of people were playing Farmers as seriously as I was. So it was probably around WTC that I really realized that, hey, I might be able to, like, surprise people. Not only play this well, but play it in a way that people did not realize was possible or did not realize was extremely strong. So it was at that point that I really felt like if I refine my game plan, if I really get the first two turns of Thresher down to a science, I can actually, like, kind of take an event by storm.
Yeah. I mean, and that, you know, basically leads to my next question. Like, what do you think people didn't practice into? I mean, we know guys like Jared, like, you've played him online. I play him online a bit and I practiced into him. He understood that, you know, Thresher was a matchup that needed to be looked at. But it blew me away seeing some of the later games where people didn't appear to have, and you would have spoken to him after the game, didn't appear to have a counter or a way of dealing with Thresher. And that just surprised me at the top level.
You know, I could not tell you why that happened. Like, so not everybody always has infinite time to play these things. So not everybody has, like, a local player that's willing to proxy X, Y, or Z model to practice for them. And I get that, and that's just, like, that's just life, right? I mean, nobody's paid to play this game except for the developers. So it's not like we can just dedicate 8 hours a day to theory crafting the Thresher matchup or whatever. But at some point in the lead-up to Worlds, so on Sunday, the morning before Worlds started, a couple of the other players at the Worlds Finals told me that they just straight up did not expect a Thresher player to get to Worlds, and that's why they were, like, frantically practicing the night before. And that, like, totally blew me away, because I thought, I've been thinking for a long time that Thresher was, if not overpowered, at least extremely strong, at least, like, a serious thing. And it just seemed totally bizarre to me that they wouldn't at least consider that a player could pick this stuff up, you know, fucking 8 months ago when the stuff was released, and practice it and get good at it and run in. Because I think if I didn't make it, like, Shane was at least odds on to make it. Like, it didn't have to be me. I don't know. So, legitimately, that is one of the weirdest things, because all my local guys were like, geez, I really need to figure out how I'm going to deal with Thresher with my chosen guild. Like, nobody other than me really hopped into Thresher with the same, like, dedication, but everybody, once they saw me playing it, were like, well, I guess I need to at least have a plan for this matchup, or at least know what he's going to be doing in this matchup. And it really felt like not a ton of players at the Nationals or LCQ level the Nationals or Worlds level outside of Chicago really felt like they took it seriously until, like, that weekend.
And that's what kind of surprised me about it. And not taking anything away from you, I just want to make that clear that winning, I think it was, what, 12 games in a row is it's a bloody hard task, and even five games in a row in a tournament just drains the shit out of you. But I just found that amazing that when we look at last year, the first World Finals, where Obulus was the obvious kind of, you know, S tier list, that half the field took him. Yet this time, I know from Dave and my perspective and a few other people that we talked to, Thresher was definitely in the conversation there, and we obviously listened to your cast as well. It just seemed really obvious from our point of view. And then when we got there, the fact that some people hadn't even looked at that, it just was super surprising.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, first of all, to your disclaimer at the beginning, I appreciate that, and I'm proud of how I played, and I'm proud of how it went, but I'm not going to pretend that, like, the surprise factor didn't help me. It definitely did. I mean, like, Christian Metz is an incredible player and, like, one of the best skill ball players playing right now, no question. And I got lucky that I was able to receive, but in the receiving matchup in Thresher versus Hammer, he just didn't feel super prepared. And, I mean, that's obviously to my favor, and I'll take that every day of the week. Like, I mean, and, yeah, I guess it is weird. I mean, so we've gotten, we being strictly the worst, have gotten a lot of flack, I think justifiably so, for kind of scoffing at Christian Metz's Hammer game leading up to the WTC, and scoffing at like people who felt that Hammer was very strong in general. And we kind of got, I mean, at the very least, we got punished a little bit for it because we lost to Germany 1. And I think that watching Christian play kind of redefined, or at least opened my eyes at least a little bit to why Hammer can be good, and like in what situations Hammer can be good. So even though I have reservations about Hammer in general, still, I respect it a lot more. And I think that Christian's choice of like mating Hammer is not totally ridiculous, which is something that I felt before. And so maybe it's just like, people need to be more open to that type of thing. When you have somebody like me or whoever being on a podcast, you know, fucking every 2 weeks yelling about how Thresher is strong, even if you think that those Chicagoans are idiots who don't know what they're talking about, it's worth at least looking into. It's worth at least having your, you know, your pal one weekend, like, pick it up and think about it for a little bit and practice it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, I guess that also blows me away because I think you guys have been vocal about how strong he's been, so I would have thought that would have projected onto a lot of people. So
Pat at least is a badass hell about it.
yeah. You can't sense that at all in your podcast. so that brings me to an interesting point. Christian in that game, and in fact, we saw it a couple of times. What do you think's the main mistake or the main issue people have playing into Thresher? Because this was kind of a consistent theme throughout it, and you know, you obviously just said that you've got those first couple of turns down. What do you look for as a Thresher player to really punish the opponent?
Well, I guess I think one of the things that people do when they don't know what the opponent's first turn is going to look like in general, whether it's Thresher or someone else, is just sort of stick to their own game plan and try to power through it. I think that's kind of what Christian did in our game, is he didn't feel like he had a strong grasp on what Thresher was going to do, but he sort of said to himself, and this is just a guess, so I shouldn't be, I'm not speaking for
this. Yeah, that's fine.
But he just said to myself, I'm going to do what I know Hammer does well, and I'm just going to, like, tough it out, and on turn two or turn three, whenever I finally get to my game plan, I'm just going to play the game that I know. But the problem with Thresher is that, given the opportunity, given the setup, relatively unabused, Thresher probably has like the highest and safest damage output in the game in the first two turns. And that might not literally be true, but it's just so safe and so hard to deal with, and so consistent that I think that it's like, you can't just say, I'm just going to tough it out. Like, you have to actually have a plan to deal with his first turn, because his first turn is maybe the best of the game, one of the best of the game. Yeah. It's at least the best of the game of, like, the captains that rely on melee. Like, there might be a better turn one that can come out of somebody like Ballista, because he's got that range threat on his whole team, right? Yeah. But in terms of, like, melee captains, like your Hammers and your Fillets and your Threshers, Thresher is just the best. He's just, like, there's just no question. He just shuts you down, he sits you down, and he says, like, you just have to sit there and take it from me for this activation and turn two. And I think if you don't have...
You're still alive.
Yeah, exactly. And then just, like, cool, you get to play your game, but I've killed two of your dudes. Like, and so... Like, what I think, and Christian and I talked a little bit about this after the game, and what I think one of the strongest ways to deal with Thresher is Mason's playing Honor and him choosing to kick. And Christian did, or I won the role, and I chose to receive after seeing his Hammer pick. But I'd actually choose to kick as Thresher if I was dealing with Honor, because Honor can do this thing with Superior Strategy where she can get two uninterrupted activations as the kicker after Thresher is gone.
Yeah.
And so that actually gives you a chance to, like, really respond to Thresher. And one of those activations can be Where'd They Go? It can be Flint with Where'd They Go? Which means that even if Flint is knocked down, he still can Where'd They Go over and probably generate momentum on Thresher, which then means his next activation could be Mallet to hit Thresher and maybe win momentum and turn that into a Thresher kill on the top of two.
Yeah.
And so that's something that Thresher really has to respect. And there's nothing like that on Hammer's team if Hammer has to kick. Yeah. If Hammer has to kick, it's just like, all right, you move your counter charge up, and you try to put him in a position where Thresher can't engage your countercharge, but Thresher has the ball, so he probably can engage your countercharge. There's just really, like, legitimately nothing that Hammer can do. He can, at best, survive the back-to-back activations. He can't interrupt them in any way, right?
Does he actually survive it, though? I mean, you strip his
arm. No, he does not. I mean, it's really got to be...
He straight dies.
Yeah, it's really got to be just horrible dice on the Thresher player's part, especially because Hammer is working with that 3 defense, which means that, like,
he goes to
you, I mean,
when once you've, like, taken his armor off and the rest of it, he's fucked.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, yeah, and Thresher can reliably get to the 4th column on his playbook, which is where there are 2 options. One is the 2 damage knockdown, and the other is 2 damage they ain't tough.
Yeah, and that's the money column, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Like, if he hits that in his first 2 attacks, he's killing somebody. Like, no question. So,
And I mean, I think, so I think this is just, this is the issue with Thresher, in the sense that there is limited counterplay available to your opponent across a whole range of teams. So the game seems to be one where you have to shift to a plan that looks to interrupt his first turn activation, if only to stop that back-to-back activation on the second turn.
Definitely. And I think that that's, first of all, I think that that's, like, one of my strengths is planning. Like, I'm really good at coming up with good first 1 or 2 turn plans. And so Thresher is, like, perfect for me because I'm given this guy where it's like, if I plan better than you on the first 2 turns, I'm just going to win the game. I'm just going to snowball off of that advantage and win the game. And it also means that, like, players that don't prepare enough for that matchup will really suffer. Like Christian Metz, he just didn't have a specific plan for turn 1, and that really showed in our game, I thought.
Yeah, it showed across a whole range of games that you played, though. Like, you look at the score after those games are finished, and it's consistently, like, I think the highest is, like, 12-4, with the exception of maybe the game that you had with Shane Waddy, and the game
with JJ.
And that's really my question. That game with JJ, you know, we spoke to Jared McGraw, who said that, you know, they all got together and they shopped some some counterplay to Thresher ahead of that game that you and he played. But
yeah, the fucking League of Extraordinary Gentlemen assembled the night before.
It takes a 3-headed monster, apparently.
Yeah.
So maybe can you give us some insight into that game? Because my one great regret is that it was not on stream and it's not been recorded.
Yeah. Yeah, I really wish that game had been streamed, because I think that would have been really interesting for people. So I actually did get a pretty good turn 1 and turn 2. I just messed up a little bit, and then the dice really did not favor me. You know, you always, whenever you make a mistake, a small or a large mistake, there's always a chance that the dice just help you out anyway, right? It's like you chose the wrong thing, but your dice just explode, and it's like, okay, I survived this game, right? That didn't happen for me, that game. Basically, JJ came in with a good game plan, I think, which was he was playing Pin Vice, and he's relying on, and he received, which is good, both of which are good for him. And one of the important things about Pin Vice is she can have +2 damage on her stuff, right? Relatively reliably. And she can have +2 damage at a free charge. And that means that she has really consistent damage, and that means that she can probably take out Thresher. So that's always pressure on me, is that she can take out Thresher possibly in 1 activation, but definitely in 2. And the other thing is that she has the ball, and she has the ball on these really hard-to-kill strikers in Hoist and Velocity, right? And everybody knows that Hoist is, like, basically impossible to kill, and Velocity is pretty tough, too. And so what that means is that when she receives the ball, she can keep the ball on one of those strikers and sort of split my forces. Like, she wants, Pinvice wants to, like, have the strikers deep in my side of the field and take goals opportunistically, maybe take snapshots and stuff like that. And that's not something that Thresher's team can deal with if they go down on points early. Because you never want Thresher and Tater to be working on 2 different things. They're really your only full-on output models, and they're amazing. They're both incredible models, but it means that they need to be focused on something together. They want the fight to be in one spot where they're just, like, tearing shit up. So what he did early is he kept the ball far back on Pinvice, and I was actually able to get to Pinvice, and I was able to knock her down and end her first turn activation, which is great for me. And I went top of turn 2, and I legendaried, and I just barely didn't kill Pinvice. And that was a disaster. Because as soon as that happens, she's able to just, like, counterpunch and kill Thresher over a couple activations. And that means that the fight's starting on his side of the field, which is bad for me because he's got range threat and I don't. And he's got compound, so he has a counter charge over there waiting for me. And I have to just kind of, like, dig my way into his lines and kill as much stuff as I can while also defending the ball, which I've gotten a hold of, after he scores. And I can only score to win at that point because he's so far up on points that if I score, he gets back control of the ball, and he's able to dictate the pace of the game. So I can only score if I'm going to win it. we fight and fight, and of course I'm doing more damage than him, because still farmers, once they're in a fight, will do more damage than his engineers will. But he's getting consistent momentum control, and it's rough for me. And the one saving grace I have is that I can... Actually, two saving graces. One is Thresher is really good at triggering Gluttonous Mass, because what he can do is he can hit someone else and hit the two damage and they ain't tough, and put they ain't tough on a Gluttonous Mass model. That's a recommended trick if anybody didn't think of that, who's playing Thresher.
That's brilliant.
It's great. It makes Pat so sad when he's playing Esters.
Yeah.
But,
that's fantastic.
Well, he doesn't seem particularly happy to start with, so I can't imagine what that's like.
Yeah, it gets very dour. The lights go dim, all stuff like that. But, so you do that to trigger Compound, which makes... Trigger Compound's Gluttonous Mass, which makes him a little bit easier to deal with. So I'm going for the kill on Compound. And then the other saving grace is that I had Huaria. So when he scored with the Velocity, I had a Harvest... Or, not a Harvest Marker. I had a Vengeance Token on her, right? So at some point, I'm winning the fight, and I have control of the ball. And I'm threatening to kill Compound and then score a goal to win the game. Because I'm at 6 points, and he's at 8 points. And he manages to, like, brick up in front of his goal such that I actually can't see the goal with Tater. And the end of the game comes when my Tater charges into Compound and blows up his Compound. Like, you know, he gets the scything charge after I've already popped Gluttonous Mass, and it does a bunch of damage and it kills Compound. And Compound explodes, and it kills my Thresher, actually, because I wasn't able to keep him alive then. So that puts him at 10 points, and it puts me at 8 points. So I'm trading points badly here. And then I hit Velocity, and it was going to go poorly because Velocity is part of the team of models that's blocking my line of sight to the goal. But I have the Vengeance Token, so I trigger the Vengeance Token, and I get the double push with Tater, push her out of range, both so she can't counter and take the ball from me with her close control, and so she's no longer blocking line of sight, and I take a bonus time back up to 3-die goal, and I make it in. And I'm down on momentum at that point, especially after taking the bonus time goal, and I'm down on points, so if I miss that goal, that 87.5% or whatever it is, I'm just done. Like, I might as well concede. Okay. I probably would literally concede, but he wins momentum, and he probably kills my Tater, and I'm just done. And so that was a really tight game, and what was important about it was that he was able to, with his combination of range threat and his ability to control the ball with close control models, he was really able to force me to fight on his side of the field, where his models, especially his Pinvice, who's very fast and does a lot of damage, are coming back on the field and immediately hitting me with stuff. That's a big deal. Close control is a huge pain for farmers because their tackles just kind of suck. Like, Thresher has a good tackle in that it's accessible to him. It's on 2. But, first of all, he only has 5 attacks. He can never get above 5 attacks, so he really hates to dedicate an entire attack to tackle. And it's unmomentous. And unlike a lot of his other results, like the 2 damage knockdown and the 2 damage they get tough, it's not a combo result. So he only gets one thing out of it. He only gets the tackle. So the fact that against a close control model he has to do that twice, it feels awful. You're throwing away 2 of your most important influence on this tackle. And nobody else wants to tackle either. Tater doesn't want to, because if he's tackling, that means he's not triggering the scything charge if he's charging or whatever. So there's a lot of reasons why close control is super frustrating for the farmers. And I think that makes engineers a good matchup into farmers in general. And then I also think that JJ was prepared, and he knew that he needed to force me to fight on his side, and he knew that he needed to split my team and stuff. I think I just played the actual scrum a little bit better than him, making slightly more efficient decisions. And then I think that I did get lucky in the end. I got lucky that the goal hit and that I was able to kill Compound. None of my dice on that crucial 6-point Tater activation blew up in my face, because if any one of those attacks went wrong, I was just done. I was just completely hosed. So
that's interesting. My next question, or something that I wanted to ask, how does control into Thresher look? You know, I noticed you played a number of Obulus players during the course of the LCQ. How were those games in relation to Thresher? Because, you know, I think the meta shifted a little bit. The conversation's now one about how do we counter this monster, and it seems that control is the choice that people are opting for.
So first of all, I definitely think in general control is the right option into Thresher. Because if you just think about it as like a... It's just sort of like a resource allocation angle. Whenever you're playing Thresher, you're allocating a ton of your resources to Thresher. You're tooling him up. You're giving him harvest markers in the right spots. He's expending harvest markers to do Don't Fear the Reaper. And that's made up for the fact that his playbook is amazing, and he has 3-inch melee, right? So he pays off for that investment by doing a lot more than your average influence does. So obviously, if you have a control element that in some way invalidates or removes those influence or makes them not useful or whatever the case may be, then that's going to mean more to you than if you, like, killed the influence on, say, Ox, who is more of a control captain. So I think Obulus is a good matchup into Thresher. I think that the threat of casket time is huge. I think that Obulus has a lot of options with how he plays Puppet Master versus someone like Thresher. I think he can do sort of, I was going to call this brain dead, but it's really not brain dead. It's not like a stupid idea. It's a good idea. Of just like pushing Thresher away with Puppet Master over and over again and forcing his team to either knock him down to keep him in place or to just let him go back into the corner of the field. And then it just takes a very long time to Thresher to get to the opponent where he wants to be. And that's particularly strong because Thresher has no real range threat, neither does his team. I don't really count crop dusting as like a range threat. It's two damage at most. And then I do think that there are other parts of Obulus's game that can be good against Thresher. I think the fact that they can take Mist as a Union pick right now is a big deal because, like I was talking about with the JJ game, one of the great ways to make Thresher's team not as good is to force them to either split their attention or focus on one part of the field while the other side scores. So I think if you have control of the ball and you leave Mist in the farmer's backfield, that's a huge pain for the farmers because they don't know exactly when you're going to take the goal and you're going to try to take it at a time when they can't really respond to it. And they can't go chasing Mist because if they do, then they get less power in front of them where they're fighting your Obulus and your casket and whatever.
The other thing I do think... Sorry, Alex. The other thing that I've noticed is that the Thresher team has two definite workhorses in Thresher and Tater, and the game seems to be one of controlling that output so as to advance your own game plan. So, you know, I hear you on the casket time, and I think, you know, Double Dodge may have called that at some point in the past.
No, I don't think so. I think that wasn't you guys. Somebody else.
Oh, really? Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back to Twitter. But also tech like Ghostly Visage, which, you know, yes, shuts down absolutely that charge, not only just in terms of distance, but in the tack that is generated on the charge. So it's -4/-4, -2 tack. Huge defensive tech to shut down that big first turn.
Yeah, absolutely. I even think that misdirection in rare cases, not every turn, but in rare cases can be a big deal. The fact that he has access to misdirection is interesting to me.
And then you sort of throw in silence on top of that as well to mess with activation order. And you've actually got like a really formidable control tool to deny Thresher's game plan.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I do think this matchup is tough for Obulus. And not in that it's disadvantaged necessarily. I think if it is disadvantaged, it's just because farmers just have incredibly good stat lines outside of their defensive stats. But it's more just tough to play. It's difficult to play. I think you get kind of, with the Morticians, especially get someone like Thresher, who has 3-inch melee, you get the problem that Hunters often ran into before the errata that upgraded them a little bit, where it was like, if one thing goes wrong, or if they misposition one thing, their whole team just, like, folds like paper, right? I definitely think that every Morticians player, except for Casket, is under threat of just being deleted by Thresher at basically any time during the game. But I do think that a well-played Mortician's roster should have a really good game into Thresher, especially if they receive. If they receive and are therefore able to take that particular like threat extender out off of the field for Thresher, I think there's, at the very least, Thresher's first two turns should be heavily compromised. And if Thresher ever goes into the box, it's just a complete disaster for him. He might as, like, the Thresher player, if he isn't up on points by a lot when his Thresher goes into the box, it's like not totally unreasonable that he just concedes, honestly.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I hear a rumor you played that and Thresher went into the box today. Is that true?
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
Bring it up.
Heard about
we can sledge Jared. Yeah,
Jared and I played a Vassal game today. I fucked up so much in this game. I was told when I won this past weekend that it's a curse that now I'm going to lose a bunch of games in a row and look like a total fraud. I played against Jared McGrath, who is, as you guys know and often advertise, a wonderful man. And indeed. He was playing Morticians into my Thresher, and I was trying out Plowman as a tech piece against Morticians. And I thought the Plowman actually worked really well. I was able to ignore his horrific odor from Casket, which is great. And it meant that turn one, he could only Puppet Master me 3 inches, Puppet Master Thresher 3 inches, because he's always in rough terrain. But I fucked up on turn two. I didn't Legendary what I should have, and that meant that I didn't kill Obulus, and that Obulus was able to help Casket put me in the box over the course of about a turn and a half, because on turn three, my Thresher was shut out by Silence, and that meant that I had to just sit there and wait patiently while I was tossed in the box. Honestly, Jared should have won that game, and he just got really unlucky. He had two attacks to take to get momentum on one turn off of my donkey.
Oh, was the mist? He said something about a mist activation.
Yeah. So I worked out the odds after the fact, and he had about a 75% chance to get momentum off of those two attacks. In total, 75% chance. And then after that, it would have been a 3-die goal, so whatever that is, 87.5% chance. It just went planted face first into the ground. He wasn't able to get the momentum, so he wasn't able to get the goal. And then my Thresher was able to get back to the fight. And this is sort of what I'm talking about, is it's like, if one thing goes wrong for those Morticians, they just kind of fold. And I was able to, after that happened, I was able to get control of the ball back, and I just straight up win the fight, because, like, if I get to touch Obulus, he just evaporates. So,
yeah, it turns out it was really close. Melee is a good thing. Who would have thought?
Yeah, it's a pretty good counter to unpredictable. I feel very skilled every time I use that to defeat unpredictable.
Yes, it's definitely skill.
Legitimately, if Jared and I played that, it, like, I mean, 75% of the time, that should work perfectly, and he wins right there. So I don't consider that, like, a super sick comeback from me. I just got kind of lucky.
That's part of, you know, any tournament. Obviously, that wasn't a tournament, but we always talk about there's always a component of luck. It's a dice game. You know, one in four times that doesn't happen, and exactly what you just said, he doesn't get the goal. So it's not 75% isn't actually all the time. It's only, you know, 3 out of 4 times, right? So
yeah, exactly. I mean, to win a tournament, especially a tournament as big as Worlds with all those great players, you have to be lucky and good. You can't be just one.
Agreed.
And maybe do some homework to scoop the meta as well. I mean, like, let's not underestimate or devalue the fact that you did put in a lot of effort and you did read the meta ahead of time. I think, you know, there's something in that as well.
Yeah,
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So on the whole control game, I wouldn't mind touching on the final, and not a play-by-play of the final, because we don't want to, you know, completely slam Peter. He looked pretty sad by the end of it. But
that was rough.
Purely a question on Theron, because Dave and I chatted about this, I think, during and then after. What are your thoughts on Theron into Thresher? I mean, you know, as far as control goes and an option versus Skartha, so I'm not saying Theron is the best captain available across the board, but in terms of, were you surprised that you saw Skartha and not Theron?
So let me think about this. I guess, for Hunters, I think that both of the captains have game, and I don't really think that either one is, like, feels like the obviously right choice to me into Thresher. On the one hand, I do think that if you play something like Skatha or like Shark or Brisket 3 or Blackheart or whatever, if you, in a snowbally goal scoring list like that, I think if you get ahead of Thresher, it can be really hard for the farmers to, like, stop the bleeding, because they don't have, like, a perfect model for killing the ball. They have a 5-0 model in Jackstraw, which is nice, and he can teleport, which is cool, but they don't have close control. They don't have unpredictable movement. None of that is available to them. So I do think that if you score the first points, if you get ahead early, you get a goal early, and then you maybe turn that into a second goal pretty quickly, then I think that Thresher is at a serious disadvantage. And so I think that that's probably the plan that Pete was going for. I didn't talk to him a ton after the game, but that's the instinct that I would get from the Scamba.
No, that's fair. And you see the way he lined up was that it was, you know, don't clump up, you know, spread out and take the scorers, which he did. No, it's just interesting because obviously Theron's the control side of the coin there. And I know probably can't stop Thresher getting into him, but can really inhibit and create a lot of momentum from range. So it does become an interesting question of, you know, almost forcing your hand or
for sure,
you know, situations where, you know, throwing down Forrests, pinning him, and then you've got the option of you go now with Thresher and get to him, or he's a roller's himself away, and then you're get to anything. And that was just the thing that I had in my head is, that doesn't win you the game, granted. It doesn't score you the goals, but it has got a level of control that I thought might be useful.
No, I definitely think there's something there. The one problem with the Theron game is that so many of his beaters are 1-inch melee. That hurts so bad against Thresher. Yeah. Like, if there was, like, a 2-inch melee guy, and this is going to sound like I'm describing the bear, but I want something a little bit more consistent than the bear, a little bit less explodey and a little bit more consistent damage. Something closer to Jakar or like Gutter, but with damage. I think then you'd really be like, okay, this Theron game can work because you could like lock down Thresher and then kill him over a couple activations.
Yeah,
I think if you could do that, then I think that would be great. But it's so tough with the farmers because they have so much 1-inch melee. There's just so much of it that's like, that gets completely fucked by Tater or whoever.
Mm. Yeah,
I mean, that was exactly what happened in that game, you know.
Yes, definitely.
That was just
And I mean,
watching Pete make that measurement error, I think that's where the game fell apart for him, really.
Yeah, it was really disastrous. Yeah,
both in terms of the mechanics of the game, but psychologically as well. I think he was done at that point.
I definitely get that. I mean, he's not related. This isn't related to me specifically, but he, you know, he was also at SteamCon UK, and he apparently had some really rough games against other Thresher players there. And I think he went into the final being already tired out from playing Thresher. And I mean, that's the type of thing that's hard to avoid, but you really, if you can, at all costs, you really got to stamp that out of yourself. Because if you go into a game feeling like you've lost, then you're going to lose. That's just how it is, absolutely. Unfortunately.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was sad because Pete's a phenomenal player.
He is, and he's an impressive player, and he's a really nice guy. I've talked to him a lot on Discord, and it was cool to meet him in person. But yeah, it's just sometimes it gets in your head like that.
And I think, you know, in addition to you being the winner that weekend, Countercharge was also the winner that weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Yes.
Yeah,
I don't know how that kept happening, but I'll take it.
Sure. But there was a game on stream where Jared played Steve Easton, and it was just Countercharge City, man. We're all sitting back going, wow, okay.
I haven't gotten a chance to watch that yet, but I've heard about that game, so I'm definitely going to check it out later.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, let's address the elephant in the room. Is Thresher OP?
Yeah, probably a little bit. Farmers, not Thresher necessarily. I'm not committing to one specific model being like definitely the problem or definitely needs to be changed. I think I don't like to think like that, and it's only in very rare cases like Obulus Season 2 that I think it's actually warranted. I think in total the package that the team brings is probably a little bit too strong.
Okay. And what do you see as acceptable changes to dial that back to a reasonable level?
So this is the package that I've been suggesting, because this might surprise you, but I get this question fairly frequently this week.
What? No way.
We're just being thorough in our research here.
No, that's good. So I think that I actually think, and maybe this is not what people want to hear, but I actually think that their output in terms of offensive output is like reasonable. It's just that they're too safe on the defensive side. They take, like, they're able to survive too much and able to thwart too much offense on the opponent's side. So I think what I've been going with, and again, this is definitely not a final answer or anything like that. I think that I've talked to Steamforge people over the weekend, and they've said pretty explicitly that whether or not they're doing changes, it's going to be tested first, and I think that's the right call. I think they have time that they can work on this. But I would suggest moving Millstone and Harrows to auras, the condition taking aura and the healing aura down to 4 inches from 6 inches. And then I would also make it so that both of Thresher's abilities that interact with Harvest Markers, the one that gives him poised and then the Don't Fear the Reaper, I would reduce the range to the Harvest Markers of those, probably 3 inches for Don't Fear the Reaper, because that kind of keeps it as a theme that it's like the danger zone is inside his melee range. And then probably 3 or 2 inches for giving him poised. Because it's like the fact of the matter is he's so fast and the team is like he and Tater are so fast that they're able to like dictate the point of the fight so easily, like where the lines meet so easily. And I don't think that should be followed up with the fact that his support staff is so consistently and so freely defending him from range. So
yeah, from a long way away, absolutely.
So I think if there were more restrictions on their positioning, that would make it feel like, okay, they do a ton when they're on, but they also really get hurt when they're off, which I think is the intent, because that's why they have these garbage stat lines, right? These garbage defensive stat lines where nobody has armor, and they all are sitting at, like, 3 or 4 for the most part. I think that the intent is that, like, both teams get to live the dream in a farmer's matchup, right? Like, the farmers go fucking nuts on their activations, but then when you're hitting the farmers, you're hitting all your crazy playbook results. Mm. But the fact of the matter is it doesn't end up being the case because they have these great defensive techs that just went a little bit too far in the design, I think. Yeah. The other one that I would do is I would reduce Fallow's jog to 4 inches. I caused a big shitstorm with this world thing, so everybody's worried about Thresher, but I really think that once people get range practice in, and especially it's basically been hinted at on and off now that the organized play document is switching to you roll off, then you decide captain, which is what we've been harping on. If that does go into effect and Grange gets to be this thing where you only see Grange when Grange is receiving, I think the team of Grange, Millstone, Tater, and Fallow is going to be absurdly impressive. There's going to be teams that just don't know how to deal with that.
Yeah, I played it the other day. It's fantastic.
Yeah, even if you're kicking, as long as you get to the fight without having lost the game, there's no team that can beat that team in a scrum. It's absurd. Like, it's such a puzzle to unpack. So unpack. So I think Fallow needs to be a bit slower on the jog, because then her between the rock ability is just not quite as good.
Yeah, she's just because she is a crazy old lady, and the fact that she is super fast is not exactly thematic. So
yeah, just the amount of places that she can go when her abilities get triggered is just it's ridiculous. She's so good.
Yeah, no, I love her. Yeah, I played her the other day, and it's good fun. But I like your point about how everyone lives the dream. I think early on, Dave and I played blacksmiths into farmers, and I reckon Dave got about 3 or 4, maybe only 3, momentous 7s off into farmers. It was just insane. But it was into Grange, and Grange is still healing and surviving it. That was the funny part. Like, right. He still was living through it. So,
yeah. And so I think the farmers should be allowing people to go nuts because they themselves have crazy offensive output. So
absolutely.
So where next, Botsy? What are you going to play next? You done with farmers, or are you going to stick it out?
So I'm not like done with farmers, but I'm probably not going to be practicing them as often because there's really well. Okay, so we have the whole next year's competitive format thing, and I don't know. I don't have any special information. I don't know if anybody does, or if they're even decided yet about where U.S. nationals are going to be and when they're going to be. But until those are announced, or until it comes time for WTC again, and hopefully I can make it, I don't really have a big event that I'm practicing for. Like, it just feels fucking awesome that I just won this thing, and I'm glad that there's a few months where I don't feel like there's a big tournament that I really want to compete at. So obviously there's local tournaments and stuff. I'm going to play some blacksmiths. I think blacksmiths are really cool, and it's a change of pace for me. I really want to learn how to get good at like a really goal-heavy team. So I'm going to try to learn that through blacksmiths.
The singled out boys, they sent us over the second blacksmiths box from SteamCon UK. And,
oh, sweet.
Yeah, played some Hearth and Alloy. Man, they just... they're the missing piece of the team, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Just amazing.
No question. So much fun. Yeah, they're a blast. They're fun to play, and they're so strong. Yeah, it's great. I don't have like a specific read on how good overall the blacksmiths, I think, are, because they're just so complicated and so weird. Like, they have such unique problems to them that no other guilds do.
Yeah.
But they're fun. I know they're fun to play, so...
Yeah.
They look like fish that they can kill. It's great.
Yeah, they got a really reliable 2/2 if they need to switch it up, which I quite like.
Yeah.
Did you pick up a box at StinkCon US?
I did, yeah. I have the whole set actually right in front of me right now, including the Christmas Hearth, who I like quite a bit because she's easier to package, so...
Efficiency.
Ever the pragmatist, Alex.
Yeah, seriously, man. Buckwheat doesn't fit in fucking anything.
What did your girlfriend do when you came home with two massive trophies? I mean, you know, did you guys celebrate?
We did. We celebrated a little bit over the course of the week. And I guess I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we're not that kind of podcast, all right?
I didn't think so. I know you guys are family friendly at all.
Absolutely. Not explicit at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Nah, nice. Yeah, blacksmiths are a shit ton of fun. I've only watched them from the other side of the pitch, but doing the math on bolts threat range is it's like 30 inches or something ridiculous like that if you trigger it with, you know, everything else. It's great.
Once you set him up, he does a surprising amount of damage as well.
Oh, that was the other thing. Yeah, he got to 4 damage consistently, wasn't he?
He's got 4 at the end of his book, cool. So attack 5 long book. Yeah, I was rapping for 5 damage pretty consistently after setup. They're a weird team. Their playbooks are just bizarre.
They are really strange. I really like Cast, too. I'm actually really digging Cast with Furnace as opposed to with her quote-unquote actual Master Burnish. I think they're a really good fighting duo.
She gets the +1 damage, doesn't she?
Yeah, from the fire, which Furnace applies. And then he also, you know, strips the armor. So he really sets her up perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you tool her up as well, and it's just gross at that point.
Yeah, what's cool about her is, unlike most of the apprentices, where they really need their masters to go first in the turn, because fire persists between turns, Furnace can kind of set her up at the end of one turn, and then if you win momentum, she can go in. So that's pretty unique to her, and I think that's really strong. Yeah, they're just really cool. They're like a whole different puzzle to work with, and it'll be nice to try out something completely different from Farmers.
So has Pat's results at the LCQ and at StinkCon US disinvested him of Brewers?
Yes, I think that's fair to say. I think he is, I don't want to speak for him entirely, but I think it's pretty clear that he is taking a break from the duties of being King of Brewers.
Fair.
And I mean, it's rough. I mean, they're like, especially when you got shit like Farmers running around, like, Farmers are just so much fucking faster than Brewers, and Brewers don't have dodges and stuff. It just feels like you're sitting over there waiting to be killed with the Brewers. It's rough. I know Tim has found some success with Esters, and, you know, more power to him. I'm always following what Tim is doing, but Pat has worked on the Esters thing, and he's worked on the Tapper thing for forever, as you guys know, and I think he deserves, he owes it to himself to play something a little bit more conventionally strong.
Yeah.
Also, I think that you just got to shift with the meta at some point, right? If it's not working, wait. It'll, you know, often comes back around again anyway.
Yeah,
that's for sure. And I mean, we got the sub guilds coming out, or the minor guilds. So, you know, who knows what the fuck they'll add to the Brewers?
I think regardless of where Pat goes, we could all agree on the fact that Tim is basically the Area 51 of Guild Ball.
I think I know what you mean, but can you explain that a little bit?
In that, I don't know what fucking aliens he has in his basement. Or, you know, what sort of weird ancient technology he's working with, but he is so far beyond the norm that, yeah, it's always interesting and novel and exciting.
Just to see what he's doing. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, I definitely think that's true. It's always worth looking at, but nobody's obligated to understand it.
No.
I don't think we have the means at this point.
I definitely don't. That's for sure.
Yeah, I love that dude.
Yeah, he's great.
You want to take a soapbox for a little bit and maybe use this podcast as an opportunity to send a message to the world?
Oh, geez, I don't know. I just, sure. Thank you, everybody, for being a part of the Guild Ball community. It's almost exactly 2 years, actually, since I decided that I wanted to start playing Guild Ball and play my first demo, that I won Worlds. And that feels sick, and... obviously, there's a lot of whatever this comes up, or well, whenever me winning comes up, it's going to be mostly talking about the games I played and stuff. But it was really cool to see people that I've met before and to meet new people at SteamCon for the first time. I'm just really grateful for this community. The game's great, the community's great, and it's been really cool being a part of it in a lot of different ways, whether that's as a podcaster or a player or whatever. And I don't know. I don't know if there are any actual responsibilities for being world champ, but if there are, hopefully I can just show people how to play Guild Ball in... I guess I was gonna say in a new way, but that's Tim's thing. He's the king of new. I'm the king of broken shit, I guess.
Well, if somebody doesn't Photoshop you with a tiara, I will be deeply disappointed.
No, that's my first edict as king of the world. Somebody do that.
Brilliant.
And did you want to pass on in a special thank you to the Wank Dungeon?
You know what, I should. That's absolutely true. I love the Discord. I love talking to everybody on the Discord. It's been great. All the different ways that people talk to each other about Guild Ball are great, but the Discord feels like especially suited to what I like to talk about and how I like to talk about it. And I'll even spend some time this year as a thank you to them working on some stave tech or something.
I think you owe it to the world, Alex.
Yeah. I have the expert right in my house. So if we can't figure something out, then I guess it just doesn't work.
Mm.
It's going to be a busy year with all your official duties, no doubt.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I'm kind of getting worried now, actually.
Opening a new Malort distillery. That'll be
right. We got to send it to the world.
Oh, fuck, man.
See if you guys can try some.
We are totally photoshopping you with a tiara for this episode. I hope you don't mind.
Well,
in fact,
I love that you actually had you had your catalog pose photo already for when you won, and then switched straight to Facebook. Nice.
Isn't it fucking great that it just happened to be a Thresher trophy? That's so good. I love this.
And a Blackheart one. How's that work?
Yeah,
two captains.
yeah, my famous Blackheart that everybody knows. You love him. Of Alex Spence. They think, he loves Blackheart. Blackheart's his favorite Union captain.
What, they didn't have any spare Rage trophies left? Did they give them all away at a regional quarter or something?
Yeah, Jordan got all of them and then ran for the hills.
Oh, man, Jordan. How did... He didn't quite make the cut for the Nationals. Is that right?
No, he made it to Nationals. He pre-qualified for Nationals. So he made it to Nationals, and actually Shane took him out in the semifinals.
He got thrashed.
He got thrashed. It was a bad time. I didn't talk to him too much about that game, but I don't know. Shane got there. Shane is a great player, man. He's like, maybe I made it clear that I wasn't sure exactly how good he was before our game, but I should make it clear after our two games that I knew that he was good, and he should definitely be deferred to in terms of Thresher knowledge. So
that game that he played against you in the Nationals, where he had the opportunity to take your Thresher out, do you think he should have done that?
I probably think so. I definitely understand what he was working with, and I actually don't think it was... So I thought during the game that it was basically guaranteed that he took it out. He and I talked about it a little bit, and I don't think it was guaranteed after talking to him about it. I sort of did some math wrong in my head. It was possible, but not guaranteed. I think if I was in his shoes, I would have taken the gamble and tried for it, because I think if he got my Thresher, he'd be in a really commanding position. But I definitely understand that if he didn't get the Thresher, he would be in a really bad spot. And he did end up in a bad spot. Like, I mean, because he ended up not going for the takeout. So I think it was one of those turning point things where maybe the risk was worth, or the reward was worth the risk, but I totally understand his thought process in not taking it.
So we should probably give a shout out to your boy Vincent Kirkov, who has since uploaded all of the games from both the LCQ and Nationals and Worlds to his channel.
Yeah, he's done a great job. Both him and Pat. I wish I could claim more credit for the streaming thing, but it was basically all them because I was playing the whole time. They did a great fucking job. I know Vince was super happy with how it turned out, and he should be. The SFG guys ended up needing some help with the stream, and we were able to put it in, and I think it's safe to say that people could look forward to, or dread, depending on their opinion, more strictly the worst streamed content at some point. So
no, I think it was really good. It was top quality, and any time, you know, you get Giblin on there, I think Vince is fantastic in terms of the commentary as well.
I thought
it was real top show.
Yeah, I'm proud of how it came out. I'm really happy for those guys, and I look forward to... They started calling me the talent by the end of the weekend. I was the actor on the screen. that was great, yeah. It was a really cool experience to set that up for them, and hopefully I get to actually do more with it in the future.
Well, thank you for stopping by the Double Dodge Caravan.
But a pleasure as always.
Yeah,
we appreciate your time. We know, obviously, how late it is for you, Matt, so thanks for making the time so soon after Worlds as well.
Yeah, of course, man.
Yeah, and onto the next challenge, I suppose. Huge effort.
Yeah.
Huge effort.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for doing the podcast.
Pleasure. And welcome back, Alex Botts, the world dominator, the man from Illinois, the Thresh Prince. He was pretty good, actually. I enjoyed that chat. And the more I chat to him, I can feel that love grow between Australia and the US, barring the Trump that sits between us.
It's always the Trump, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He is the literal orange elephant in the room.
No, it was a good chat, and you know, he's a good dude. He actually, and I think we said it in the interview, he got up. It was fucking midnight where he was, and that's fantastic. He was willing to like sacrifice his time for us. He offered a time slot for us, which is midnight for us. We said no. He said, "Okay, I can do midnight. I'm down with that." I think he's shown us Australians the love. It's fantastic. So
yeah, so full credit to him. We have given him a lot of shit over the last year or so, all in good fun. You know, sledging is a way of life here in Australia.
Absolutely.
But to his enormous credit, he takes it on the chin and just keeps rolling. And I think, basically, he's got the ultimate middle finger to everybody at this point, which is number one ranking world champ.
Yeah, absolutely. And why wouldn't you?
Yeah. Good on you, Botsy. Good on you.
Nice one. So have we got any thank yous, news, announcements? I know we're not that structured, so we'll just roll into all of that.
Yeah, so I think the big one here is CanCon. CanCon 2018, Australia Day weekend, 27th of January is the Guild Ball tournament.
Yep.
Looking forward to that one. Looks like we're getting some decent player interest as well. So I hear that young Trent Dennison and young James Moops Magic Morehouse will be there. They look to be good. So it'll be a good field.
Nice. No, I look forward to the Capital Cup. Like CanCon's just a great event, with all the other gaming systems that kind of are involved. You know, even if you play one day and just float around the second day, it's really good. There's a whole bunch of gamers, you know, bunch of great guys to just have a beer with. A little bit of a tip for the new players: don't get fucking smashed the night before. We did that last year. It's not great. It may turn out great, but that's potentially just a shit ton of luck.
Better lucky than good.
Yeah, absolutely. That's our motto.
So, how's the old Patreon going, Cam?
We've got a bit of love going on at the moment. We had another sign up, and I believe it's at the top tier, which is a choo choo motherfucker. So, Michael Tisdale, you've wasted your money. Choo choo to you. So, well done, sir.
Choo choo to you.
Choo choo to you. Absolutely. But what a champ. So your stuff's in the mail. So if you go to patreon.com/doubledodge, all words, not just arrows, you will find us. You can send us $1 a month, send us $5 a month, $10 a month. Anything is appreciated. I even managed to guilt trip, you know, friends of ours, like good Hayden Sheehan, into $1 a month, you know, just before his wedding, and he had to fork out, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it's all appreciated, and it all helps us basically pay for what we do, because, you know, this stuff actually does cost money.
Yeah, I mean, you sound proud about guilting Hayden into giving us money. I'm not sure that's something to be proud of, Campbell.
No, I am now. The wedding's over. It's fine.
I want to point out that, you know, coming in at the $10 level, you get a stubby holder, you get a Double Dodge widget, and you may have seen some of those widgets on stream.
Oh, mate.
At Worlds. They're fresh, man. They're so fresh.
Ooh, I see what you did there. Jared McGraw likes to put his prey out on the table. I did ask him to put two circular widgets near the end of it to make it look like some form of phallic symbol. I think he did that. I'm not sure. I'll have to have a chat to him about that. We might have to just dial him down or actually start to charge him some more. But they're wicked widgets. We basically send it out as a bit of a love token. So if you sign up to get, obviously, the $10, that's cool. I appreciate if people want to dial down their support after a little while. Maybe just give us a month or so because the fucking postage is horrendous. So obviously, you know, we lose for the first couple of months. But any money is fantastic. Helps us pay for the hosting, a lot of the stuff we do.
Yeah, I noticed young Pete Williamson had his double dodge widget out on the table in his game against Botsy. Maybe if he'd used it at the crucial moment.
Potentially.
Yeah. So always we've got to thank Big Daz. Big Daz, NerdvanaGamesSA.com.
Daz, if you're in Australia, if you're anyone else in Australia, not Daz, and you are looking at some of these limited edition models, namely Millstone, buying the Farmers, I know he's been able to secure the ability to basically purchase that if you buy the Farmers through him. I know he's got quite a few on order. Get on to NerdvanaGamesSA.com, hit up Daz. And so he can basically help you out and get that Millstone because it's actually not that easy. You generally have to be a bricks and mortar store to get that situation.
Yep, and that'll go for the limited edition Bolt as well when it becomes available. The other thing I wanted to touch on was the change to the Nationals feeder tournaments into Worlds. So they've raised the number of players required for an event to receive a golden ticket. So it's gone from whatever it was to a hard floor of 30, need a minimum of 30. How many did we get at Nats this year? I think it was
24 or 26. It was an even number. So
close, but we're gonna have to put in the effort.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that goes for any of those tournaments. I get it from Steamforged's point of view. Like they've obviously put the carrot out there. They're willing to pay, but obviously, you know, the communities need to reward them. So we'll look at where the Australian one's going to be. I know a few messages have kind of gone around as to where it's going to be hosted. But if you are super keen to get there, have fun. They're the best tournaments. You meet a whole bunch of, like, great blokes and girls as well. And you just get a lot of gaming on. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So we really want to get to that 30. We'd really like to enable that golden ticket again next year.
How are we going to send Pete Williamson to Worlds if we don't have enough players?
I know. I mean, yeah, he's in the arse end of the world. Yeah, it's pretty hard for him to even get here, let alone, actually, it's cheaper for him to get to Nationals than it is for us. I'm still reeling over that. I don't know how the fuck that happened. Yeah. The other exciting part about the Worlds is that they're expanding it to 16-player finals, which I actually kind of like because I think there is a definite difference between winning, even at the highest level, an 8-player tournament versus a 16-player tournament. So I kind of like that. It enables them to reward bigger metas, which I get. You know, maybe the US and UK deserve an extra one, and maybe some other countries need a qualification spot. So who knows?
You've had a few this afternoon.
I have. I've danced in a mankini that has Santa nay close to my... genitals.
Right. That's great. That's great. Ho, 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 Campbell.
Yeah, absolutely. Ho.
Yeah. So the other thing is the Australian WTC team. So there's been a bit of interest. It looks like we've got some hands going up. We probably need to throw some structure around it at some point. So if you're in Australia and you're interested in being on that WTC team, let's start that conversation. Hit us up on Facebook or on Twitter.
We can
start to get that moving.
Absolutely. So contact your local pundit if you don't know how to contact us. We're not saying that we're the authorities on this. We just seem to be a bit of an enabler to communicate between everyone. So we're more than happy to chat to all the different pundits, work out who's keen, and then go from there. I know Aaron Hartwell will get people coming in there. I know Haydos is really keen. So we're going to get people from everywhere. I think we just get everyone's names in a pot, and then we work out some form of committee from that point.
Yep, let's do it. Let's get it moving. So we've rambled on for a bit. I reckon we might shoot it in the head.
Yeah.
But by way of outro, I think we say, well done, Alex. You earned it. You did it the hard way, and all credit to you.
Get jiggy with it.
Yep.